This is a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.
Hello, hello, hello. You're listening to a brand new episode of the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Thank you so much for being here, giving us a listen. My name is Dan. This is a quick trip all around the universe to see all the crazy stuff that's inside. I've been thinking, it's actually, you know, around Christmas, right? When you get those massive tubs of sweets and they're all random. You've got some caramels in there, you've got like coconutty things, you've got those disgusting strawberry creams. Well, this is kind of like that for science. You see, it covers all bases. It's everything that you ever want, all the amazing, epic and deadly stuff from around the universe in one place. Today we're chatting to a proper scientist who has written a cookbook where each recipe is a different experiment that you can do at home. We'll talk about the secret of ancient Egyptian mummification, and you can hear about one of the smallest but most dangerous creatures in the ocean. That's on the way after we get your gadget questions answered with a brand new episode of Techno Mum.
Techno Mum, engineering explorers.
Tidying my room is so boring. Picking everything up and putting it away, or throwing it away. Yuck! How long has that banana skin be there?
How are you getting on? I bought the vacuum cleaner up. I only hope it's strong enough to cope.
Never mind the hoovering. Why can't someone invent a machine to do all the tidying?
Maybe you could invent one yourself. It's a real job, you know, making new machines.
You mean I could be a robotic slave overlord, creating an army of mechanoids to do my bidding?
I mean you could be a mechanical engineer. It's a type of engineering which is almost as old as humans.
Are you sure about that, Mum? I don't think cavemen had vacuum cleaners.
Machinery is anything which does a job. Even creating a spear is engineering. Hang on, I'll explain. All machines have something in common. Like I say, they're designed to do a job. Maybe the job is to vacuum the carpet. Perhaps it's to screw a light bulb into a street lamp or assemble a mobile phone in a factory. Whatever it is, mechanical engineers design, produce and operate machinery to carry out the work.
So, mechanical engineers are kind of like inventors?
Sometimes, yes. Other times they'll be helping an inventor to create their machine. Mechanical engineers understand the science behind movement and understand the properties of different materials. They also have to understand how the environment around a machine will affect things. Heat or cold can change how materials behave, so a machine which is working with molten steel might have to be built of metals which can withstand hot temperatures. Or if a machine is part of a marine expedition, it'll need to be able to function in water and cope with high pressures.
And they'll have to build it out of a material that doesn't rust.
That's right. Machines sent into space have to be built to withstand extremes of temperature and a lot of radiation. And as there aren't any petrol stations in space, their power supplies have to be carefully designed to use what solar power they can gather. As you can see, different machines have different demands.
Sounds like there's a lot to learn about.
Yes, and it's a job which overlaps with lots of other types of engineering. Mechanical engineers often need to know computer programming, or how chemicals behave, how things fly or swim, or what keeps structures stable. The possibility for creating amazing new machinery is astounding. Check out this video.
Cool robot? What's it doing?
This is STAR, Smart Tissue Autonomous Robot. It's a robot surgeon that's more accurate than a human when making incisions or stitching up tissue. Or how about Zhao Yi, a robot doctor? Scientists have uploaded hundreds of medical textbooks into its databanks, and it's programmed to ask questions. Engineers behind these medical robots will have had to spend a long time designing the robotic system, choosing materials and tools with which to build them, and then carrying out lots of tests, making changes when things didn't work as planned. All that hard work has been worth it. These are machines that might help to save lives.
That's so cool!
There are stacks of cool engineering jobs out there, almost as many as the stacks of comics under your bed. Are you sure you need to keep them all?
Mum!
Engineering Explorers, created with support from the Institution of Engineering and Technology to celebrate the Year of Engineering. Find out more at funkidslive.com/technomum.
Techno Mum on Fun Kids, loads more from her. Brand new episodes as well on the free Fun Kids app. You can hear them all as well wherever you get your shows from, you know, places like iTunes, and they're there for you to check out whenever you fancy over at funkidslive.com. I got a question here from Arjun and Ashni. They've left it over as a review on the iTunes podcast store. They want to know why you can't actually get to the end of a rainbow. You see, Arjun and Ashni, it's because rainbows, they look incredible, but they're not really there. They're like a trick of the light. You know when it's just rained and then there's loads of water and moisture in the sky, and then the bright sunshine breaks through the clouds and then it hits the water that's lingering there, and then that breaks up the light into all the different colours that you see. You might get it occasionally as well when you've just come out of the swimming pool. You can kind of see halos of different colours around objects when you've got a load of water in your eyes, and that's how you see the colours: the red, the orange, the yellow, the greens, the blues, the indigos, the violets. It's kind of like your eyes playing tricks on you rather than a banner of colours physically being in the sky. Thank you so much for sending in the question, though. If you've got something that you want answered by me or another science expert that I'll try and get on the show, you need to leave it as a review on the iTunes podcast store. Open that up, find the Fun Kids Science Weekly, leave your name, drop us 5 stars, and put your question there as well. It's so easy over on the iTunes podcast store. Right, in a sec on the Fun Kids Science Weekly, we've got a proper scientist on the show telling us about her brand new cookbook. It's full of experiments that you can do one every day to make food. It's called the Kitchen Science Cookbook, and Michelle Dickinson has been chatting to Frankie from Fun Kids all about it. It's on the way next.
It is Frankie here. I'm sorry to be hijacking Dan's show, but I've got something very, very exciting that's happening here today. In fact, a very special guest is here in the studio with me, Dr. Michelle Dickinson. How are you?
I am fantastic. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And I'm very excited because in front of us on the table, we've got lots and lots of props. I say props. What would you describe them as?
Regular things that you would normally find in your kitchen.
Regular things that you would normally find in your kitchen. And I should probably set the scene a little bit. The reason Michelle is here is to show me some experiments. Now, Michelle is a scientist and she has written a book called The Kitchen Science Cookbook, which is very exciting. And she's brought in a few of the tricks, a few of the experiments from the book. What have we got here, Michelle?
I thought I'd share some of my favourite recipes from the book to show you, number one, how easy science is, number two, how fun it is, and number three, how you can expect the unexpected.
Ooh, very, very exciting indeed. So before we get onto the actual experiments and the actual things we've got here, I want to introduce you to the Fun Kids audience. So first up, I want to ask you about the book, The Kitchen Science Cookbook. What is it all about? What's the idea behind it?
So whenever I ask kids to draw me a picture of a scientist, they tend to draw me a picture of an old man with crazy hair and a beard and goggles.
That certainly isn't you.
And it isn't me, and it isn't the majority of scientists. Actually, we come in all shapes and sizes, and I wanted to break that stereotype of what people thought a scientist was and actually make everybody realise that we're all scientists. Every single one of us is a scientist. Scientists just discover, and they ask questions, and they tinker around with things. And so I wanted to write a book that showed everybody that they were a scientist and showed them experiments that they could do at home.
That is amazing. That's amazing. It's such a good idea and a really great way to introduce science to so many people who may never have had the opportunity or may never have wanted to check it out before. But this is such a fantastic idea. And you now live in New Zealand, is that right?
I did, yeah. So I grew up in Chester and then I went to Manchester Uni and I studied engineering there. And then I got an opportunity to move to the US to carry on my studies and do a PhD. And I'm like, free trip to the US. Of course I'm going. And then I stayed there and I worked in places like Silicon Valley, and you know, it was really fun. I lived in New York and I lived there for ages, and then I moved to Japan, I lived in India, and then I was like, where should I live next? And I went to New Zealand. I'm like, here's a good place. So
wow.
Here it is.
I've never been to New Zealand. What's it like?
Oh, it's like paradise. So Lord of the Rings was filmed there in The Hobbit, and it's full of beautiful mountains and oceans, and I go surfing before work every day, and it's a really nice place. Lots of sheep.
And for a scientist, there must be lots of interesting things to see there, right?
There are, and we're a volcanic island, so there's volcanoes. It's a really fun place to be, and it's full of really cool people, and that's why I like it.
What kind of lessons do you teach when you kind of teach people science?
So I teach at university, so I teach engineering. So I teach about materials engineering, which is why things are made out of the things they're made out of. So have a look at the chair you're sitting on, and why is it not made out of chocolate?
I would quite like it to be made out of chocolate, although I don't know it would last in the heat at the moment.
Exactly. So you wouldn't want it made out of chocolate because, number one, the ants would come and eat it. And number two, your bottom would melt it. And so we, as materials engineers, we look at things and say, well, what material does a bottom not melt? And we look at plastics and we look at metal. And then we say, well, which of those are more comfortable? Well, the soft plastic would be more comfortable. And which of those are lighter? Because you don't want a very heavy chair. And that's why most chairs are made out of some type of plastic.
Wow. Okay, that's a very good answer, and that's definitely answered my question. I should just say, I didn't put my safety goggles on, though I have got some. I don't need them, do I?
You'll be all right with this. There are 50 experiments in the book, so there's plenty for the summer holidays. And not all of them involve food. Some of them just involve things that you will find around your kitchen at home.
So the materials that we've got here, what are we going to be doing with them? And what's the first thing that we're going to be doing?
One of my favourites that isn't a food one is my chicken in a cup experiment.
Chicken in a cup. Doesn't involve a real chicken, does it?
Well, we'll find out. What I've given you here is a plastic cup. You can use a paper cup as well. It's just a disposable cup. You want a type of cup that you can put a hole in the base of. And you'll see there's a hole in the base. And what we're going to do is put a piece of string through that hole. Now, right. You're going to tie that piece of string at the end. Now, I'm terrible at tying, so I've tied a stick on the end so the string doesn't fall through. But if you're good at knots, just tie a big knot.
This is a great idea anyway. I like it.
Next, we're going to take, and this is, you don't need this, but I like it this way. We're going to take a paper towel, just a little strip of paper towel, and you're going to fold it up and you're going to dunk it in some water. Not so it's soaking wet, just so that it's damp.
There we go.
Okay, so the wet paper towel, we're going to fold it over the string and we're going to rub down and it's going to create friction. And when we create this friction, tell me what you think this sounds like. Ready?
That's unbelievable. Wait, let me see if I can do it. So before I try, that sounded so much like a chicken. Okay, so I just need to rub it on the piece of string?
Yeah, wet paper towel. You're going to rub it down on the string while you hold the cup in the other hand. And let's have a go.
What? This is unbelievable. Okay, so the crazy thing is, it sounds just like a chicken, but you look in there and there's actually nothing in there. It's just a piece of string and a wet piece of tissue.
So this is a great one if you want to tease your parents. Hide behind the couch and pretend there's a chicken in the house by making this noise and they'll be running around looking for a chicken.
This is exactly what I've been looking for a long time, and I finally found it, and I never thought I'd find it in this way, which is amazing. But there's something else that you mentioned to me before that is also involving a cup, and it's something that I particularly like because I'm a big fan of Star Wars, and this one is really, really fun, and it's another kind of sound effect that we can create. Is that
it
right?
It's actually how, in the original Star Wars series, the sound effects were created.
No way.
I know, before technology came in. And this is one of my... I love this so much because it's so simple. And so what you'll need, listen to this. Those of you who have a metal slinky will know that sound. So the slinky is like a string that you sort of... A spring, basically, that you put down the stairs and it walks down the stairs. So you're going to take that. And that sound is going to be amplified by the cup. So you're going to put that same cup that you made your chicken in the cup into the top of the slinky. And it's going to amplify the sound just like in the chicken in a cup. And have a listen to this.
You have no idea how excited this makes me. And the great thing is I can actually see what's happening. It does sound so much like the blaster, doesn't it? It sounds like, it sounds like we're in Star Wars right now.
And all we have is a slinky and a cup.
The force is definitely strong with this one. That is amazing.
There you go.
Amazing. I know exactly what I'm going to be doing when I go home. This is not the only thing that you've been up to recently, because I've heard you have a nickname, which is Nano Girl. Can you tell me a bit more about this?
So Nano Girl is a character that we've created, and she's a smart science superhero. And so we have theatre shows with her, and she goes out into schools. And it's all about teaching people about the superpowers of science with Nano Girl and her sidekick, Boris, who is a great sidekick. He's quite rubbish at science. And so Nano Girl always comes in and saves the day by building a solution or using science to solve a problem. And so she is a great way that we use to communicate what science is and how it can solve all your problems, and all you need is discovery and curiosity.
This is incredible. You've shown me experiments in the space of a few minutes, and these are just a few of the ones that you can find in the book, The Kitchen Science Cookbook.
It is out now.
It's out now. So exciting. I'm also looking forward to trying out all of these experiments as well. I've got a lot to get through. So, Dr. Michelle Dickinson, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
It is time for this week's Dangerous Dan There, where we talk about some of the most mean and evil things in the world. Today, we're headed under the sea to check out a deadly creature that can fit onto the top of a matchstick. The Irukandji jellyfish. It is tiny, and it floats deep down in the ocean around the top of Australia. Now, they're about 5 millimetres wide. They've got 4 tentacles, which can go quite long, actually, up to a metre. But normally, they're so small and transparent that it makes them really tough and tricky to spot in the water. And because of this, scientists have found it really hard to capture one to properly study its characteristics. So we actually know very little about the Irukandji jellyfish. But what we do know isn't nice. You see, unlike most jellyfish that usually just sting with tentacles, the Irukandji has stingers all over itself, and it fires its stingers, it sticks them into prey, it injects them with the deadly toxic, where you get back pain, you get cramps, you get sweat, you're sick, and you could end up dead. Now, some experts say that the sting is 100 times as potent as a cobra's and 1,000 times stronger than a tarantula's. And they're also one of the only known jellyfish to actively hunt their prey as well. And that mean ruthlessness puts the Irukandji jellyfish straight on our dangerous Dan list. Time for an episode from our speakers series on the Fun Kids Science Weekly. This is the show all about sound, it's about radio, it's about antennas, and it's about how my voice is getting straight to your ears right now.
The speakers. Who's in charge of radio waves?
The speakers are thinking about the different jobs people do to help transmit TV and radio programs. They wonder who's in charge of it all. Is there a grand high emperor overlord of the airwaves?
Yes, honkers. You would be brilliant at testing out the speakers on radio and TV sets. You certainly could test the volume.
I think I'd like to be an engineer working on the fibre optic cables that carry all the digital data into our homes, figuring out ways to get my internet to work even faster so I can upload even more selfies.
I'd be an engineer at a radio station. Remember how we saw the sounds being mixed together? They were using computers to make it sound better. Oh, I fancy trying my hand at that.
It does sound like a great job for someone who loves music. I'm not sure what job I'd like to do.
What about being a rigger, fixing the masts and towers so that the transmitters work brilliantly?
I'm not very good at heights, guys. I think I'd be too scared. I'm good at organising stuff. As long as it's not organising stuff 1,000 feet in the air.
Well, organising all the radio waves is a very important job. Maybe the most important job of all.
Like a grand high emperor, overlord of the airwaves.
Not quite. It's a job which involves a lot of people, not just one, and a lot of countries.
But how can you organise them when you can't even see the radio waves?
Well, it's like we found out. Our radios and TVs can tell which station is which because each station has a different frequency and the sound wave is waggled in a particular way. And there's a whole spectrum of radio waves out there, but there's only a certain group of them which can be used for radio and telly. Others just won't be able to be detected by radios and TVs. And if you use the same frequency as I'm using...
Oh no, that doesn't sound good at all.
That's called interference. So governments in each country have to decide how to share out the frequencies in a way that they won't overlap. Two stations can have the same frequency.
But only if they're far enough apart, right?
See? You're a natural.
But why do different countries have to get together? What has French radio got to do with English radio?
Bonjour. 10 heures en temps universel.
Ici la radio française.
Might be kind of cool, but radio waves don't care about country borders, so it's important that the planned sharing out frequencies are agreed between everyone.
To help work out how each of them can use the same frequencies, but mapped out in such a way that they won't overlap.
Yeah, so you could have a job like that. Figuring out which frequencies could safely be used and how powerful the transmitters can be.
I think I'd rather be the Grand High Overlord of the Airwaves.
That job doesn't exist.
Do not dare to tell the Grand High Overlord that she doesn't exist. After all, radio waves exist, and you can't see them, right?
The Speakers Transmission with support from Arqiva. Find out more at funkidslive.com/speakers.
Right, let's talk about all the sciencey stuff that has been lightening up the news this week. Examination of an ancient Egyptian mummy has shown the first embalming recipe that they used back then to preserve the bodies. This was a method that was used at the heart of Egyptian mummification for 4,000 years. Now, scientists think that the ancient Egyptians would use plant oil, bulrush root extract, acacia gum, and pine resin, and that would protect the body from decay. Also, researchers have developed a mathematical model to predict how global air temperatures will rise over the next few years. It shows that in the next 4 years, give or take, it's likely that we'll have extremely hot summers, as greenhouse gases like CO2, they lock the heat in and they keep it on the ground. And finally, some of the earliest galaxies ever known in the universe are sitting right on our doorstep. A study has shown that faint objects close to the Milky Way, they could be more than 13 billion years old. They've got some of the first stars ever known there as well. They formed around 100 million years after the Big Bang, which seems ages, but in universe terms, that's like a blink of an eye. Time for a lesson at the smartest school outside of the solar system as we catch up with Professor Pulsar and his class and get down with some astronaut training.
Deep Space High, the Universe Handbook with the Science and Technology Facilities Council.
Down, you lot. Today, we're in the Space Lab to work on the next chapter in our Universe Handbook. It's all about how to prepare yourself for space exploration.
What? You mean like making sure you've got the right moon boots and a packed lunch?
Not preparing your lunch, Alex. Preparing your body. I mean, astronaut training, Earth style.
Oh, Earth astronauts are light years behind most of the galaxy. A bunch of space chimps could manage their training.
We all have to start somewhere, and Earth astronauts are as tough as they come. They have to be, as their technology isn't as advanced as it is here at Deep Space High. So, come on, zip up your space suits. Astronaut training starts here.
Astronaut training starts in a swimming pool?
That's right, everyone in.
Water is a great place for astronauts to get used to the feeling of being nearly weightless. It's a feeling they have to get used to in space. They train in special pools called neutral buoyancy pools and practice everything from spacewalks to making snacks. Have a try just walking about. Go on.
It's quite hard to move around underwater. Nothing quite goes where you want it to. It must take them ages to get anything done.
It does take some getting used to. Let's get up to the surface.
You can take your helmets off, but before we get out, I want you all to swim one length in your space suits.
You're joking! They're so heavy! Can't we take the boots off at least?
No chance. Astronauts have to be super physically fit. They have to be able to swim at least three lengths of a large pool like this with all their equipment, including their boots. Aww. Oh, okay. Seeing as how I'm in a good mood, I'll zap us all onto dry land. End the program, computer. Load up astronaut training, phase two.
Well, we're on dry land. Looks like some sort of desert. But it's hard to see. It's pitch black.
Where are we? And what does a desert have to do with space? I think it's a bit scary out here. I don't like it at all.
Keep your voices down. Another part of astronaut training is wilderness survival. Astronauts have to be not only physically tough, but mentally tough too. Surviving in unfamiliar surroundings, like here, in the middle of a desert at night. No maps, no food. How long do you think we'd survive?
But come on, sir. Come on, sir. You're not
not going to meet a wolf in space, are you?
It's more about being brave and resourceful. You only get one crack at space missions. Things can go wrong, and do. And if technology lets you down, it can be up to the astronaut to come up with a solution. Right, there's just one more stop on our astronaut training journey. Computer, load up the Vomit Comet.
We're on a massive plane.
Not just any plane. This one flies to a high altitude and then goes up and down in parabolic arcs to give the astronauts a taste of real weightlessness. Hold on, we're going up.
Whoa, I can really feel gravity pulling us back. Must be a bit like a real takeoff. And hey, look, now we're floating.
Brilliant! Woohoo! Look, I'm doing a cartwheel.
Make the most of it. Weightlessness lasts about 20 seconds. Then, as the plane descends sharply, gravity will kick in again. Here we go.
Whoa! It's like being on a roller coaster. I think I feel a bit sick. How many times would an astronaut have to go up and down?
Oh, only a few hundred times. That's why it's called the Vomit Comet. Computer, end training. That's all for today. Don't forget your homework. Just like Earth astronauts, you'll need to swat up on astronomy, physics, mathematics, geology, meteorology and aeronautics too. Earth astronauts have to have brains as well as brawn.
OK, maybe they are pretty cool. Not chimps at all.
Deep Space High, the Universe Handbook with the Science and Technology Facilities Council.
That is about all we've got time for on this week's Fun Kids Science Weekly. Remember, if you've got a question, something that you have thought about the world and the universe around you and you really want it answered by a proper, bona fide science expert, you need to let me know, go through me first. You can send it to me as a review on the iTunes podcast store. So get on that on your phone or tablet, something like that. Find the Fun Kids Science Weekly, leave your name, drop us 5 stars and leave us a question. Also, while you're on the iTunes podcast store, remember, that's the best place that you, one of the best places you can find all of our amazing science series. It's also on the free Fun Kids app and over at funkidslive.com, and you can hear Fun Kids on your DAB digital radio on that Fun Kids app. And as always, check us out at funkidslive.com.
So that was a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.